At more than any time in history, our lives are full of words. More words than we could ever imagine. If you just had the right equipment to tune in, there would be all sorts of TV channels and radio programs that are broadcasting words, stories, information, news the whole time. And if you've got a device that's connected to the internet, well, then there's just that times a million. And like I've got a little phone here, and I've got hundreds of books in my phone. Compared to other times in history, there's just so many words all around. And now with the advent of AI, there's going to be even more words produced. I don't know whether you've heard of ChatGPT or GPT-4, but you can just ask the AI and say, please write me a story about a little boy with an orange, and it will spit out 5,000-word story for you in a matter of minutes. There's just words upon words upon words everywhere. But on the other hand, I was thinking about this. There's some things that when I was growing up that would make sense that don't really make sense anymore. And those of you that watch The Simpsons, anyone watch The Simpsons? Anyone know about The Simpsons? Yeah. And you know about the opening sequence of The Simpsons? And at some point in it, there is a blackboard with Bart, and he's writing something on it, right? He's writing like some lines on it, like Bart bucks are not legal tender, or... Or at the beginning of the Simpsons movie, he was writing, I will not illegally download this movie. I will not illegally download this movie. I will not illegally download this movie. And for those of you who are young enough, back in the day, there was a punishment thing that used to happen where you had to write out lines, just like Bart. You know, like you misbehaved in school and you had to get out a bit of paper and a pen and you had to write out, I will not misbehave in class. I will not misbehave. And you had to do it 100 times or whatever. Well, last night, I just went onto the AI and said, can you please write out 100 times, I will not download this movie illegally? And it did it for me. So that method of punishment just does not work anymore. But if you go back further, like a few hundred years, like I've got 100 books in my phone, no one had books. Books were so rare that the Bible was often the only book that people regularly saw, and there was usually only one copy of it in the village, and it was chained to the lectern. But if you go back even further to the time of the Bible, people back then couldn't type. And most people couldn't even write. And if you're going to do some writing, you often paid someone to do it for you. You would dictate it to them and they would do it. Even Paul, the writer of many letters in the New Testament, dictated a lot of what he was actually written. And you can tell that because at the end of the time of letters he says, I, Paul, write this in my own hand. It's like he just signed the end of it. It's genuinely me. And in that environment, words are much more valuable. You know, when you don't have an AI to spew out thousands of them at a prompt, when you've actually got to go and find someone and find some money to pay them, the words you write are much more valuable. And I'm trying to get out in our minds what words are really valuable to us today. And the only thing I could really think of was passwords. Those are really valuable words, aren't they? I mean, when you lose or forget your password, that's like you've lost a gold coin or something like that, and the rigmarole you have to go through to get back into whatever it is that your passwords are valuable words, right? But back in the day, all words, written words, were valuable words. And we last week looked at some really valuable words from the Old Testament. Now, the whole Bible has about 800,000 words in it. But we looked at these really valuable words in Exodus 34, where God revealed himself to Moses and he said, the Lord, the gracious and compassionate God, slow to anger, abounding in love and faithfulness, maintaining love to thousands and forgiving wickedness, rebellion and sin, but he does not let the guilty unpunished, visiting the iniquity of the parents to the children for the third and the fourth generation. That's 54, 53 small words that are incredibly valuable. They are a deep and profound and true revelation of who God is. And there's other groups of words within the Bible that are a bit like that. There's Psalm 23. There's 103 words in Psalm 23. Or the Lord's Prayer. A prayer which, if you pray regularly and not just in a rote fashion, but meditate on it and pray into it, and the themes that are around it, it will shape your life into a God-shaped life. There's 53 words in the Lord's Prayer. And when Paul was writing to the Colossians, there's another section of his writing with about 120 words that I think are also deeply powerful and deeply valuable. Because the Bible, we need all 800,000 words to tell the story of God's interaction with humanity and to flesh it out in real world examples and situations of what actually happened here, there and everywhere. We need to have that. But we also need little bits that we can memorize easily, that we can carry around, if you like a little carry-on case that takes around the story of God with you in portable form, which you can then open up and expand out whenever you need to. And this is in Colossians chapter 1. So that was a long introduction to the Bible reading this morning. Colossians chapter 1, beginning at verse 15. The Son is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. For in him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities, all things have been created through him and for him. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together. And he is the head of the body, the church. He is the beginning and the firstborn from among the dead, so that in everything he might have supremacy. For God was pleased to have all his fullness dwell in him, and through him to reconcile to himself all things, whether things on earth or things in heaven, by making peace through his blood shed on the cross. That was the 120 words. I'm going to read a few more. Once you were alienated from God and were enemies in your minds because of your evil behavior, but now he has reconciled you by Christ's physical body through death to present you holy in his sight, without blemish and free from accusation. If you continue in your faith, established and firm, and do not move from the hope held out in the gospel, this is the gospel that you heard and that has been proclaimed to every creature under heaven, and of which I, Paul, have become a servant. Those first verses from verses 15 through to 20, if you're looking for some verses to memorize, I highly recommend those verses. Because it encapsulates it in some ways the whole story of the Bible. It starts with creation. It recognizes that the need of redemption, and it talks about Jesus, and it talks about the church, and it talks about the fact that God is going to reconcile and put back together everything that's broken. In six short verses, it's a quick overview of the whole story of the Scriptures. And it's good for us to be able to just see that in the big picture format. But this passage also actually deals with the big questions that we've been looking at these last few weeks. Back in the end of February, we looked at about how people ask questions, and particularly teenagers ask questions, and those three questions are: who am I, where do I fit, and what difference can I make? Teenagers are wrestling with those questions, and adults are wrestling with those questions too. Who am I, where do I fit, and what difference can I make? And we saw that there are three parallel questions that are connected with that we really also need to answer maybe first to get to good answers for the first lot of questions. And they are: who is God? That's connected with who am I, who is God? And where do I fit? Well, where does God fit? And what difference can I make? Well, what difference is God making? And in this passage, we see in a different way who God is revealed. last week from Exodus 34, it was a list of the qualities of God, gracious, compassionate, etc. Here the shorthand is, the Son is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. So Jesus is the exact representation of God. When you look at Jesus, you see who God is really like. Now you can go back to the Gospels and read all of the thousands of words in the Gospels to get a better sense of that, but this is a shorthand of way of saying, who is God? Well, God is revealed in Jesus. But this passage then also goes on to say, well, where does God fit? And basically, God fits everywhere. For in him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, thrones or powers or rules, authorities, all things have been created through him and for him. That's a pretty comprehensive list, isn't it? Things in heaven and things on earth. Well, I don't think there's anything else outside of that, right? Whether visible or invisible, I think that includes everything. Or thrones or powers or rulers or authorities. All things are created by, come from God and are for God. God fits with all of it. He is before all things and in him all things hold together. And the Son, that is Jesus, he is the head of the body, the church. And so God fits with the church, funnily enough. He is the beginning and the firstborn from among the dead. So he's the first, the one that leads the way to the future resurrection of all. And so he fits in our future as well. So that in everything he might have the supremacy. Now, in our culture, for the last several hundred years, there has been this separation between the sacred and the secular. You know, you've got the spiritual aspects of life, and then you've got the secular aspects of life. But that's not actually how the Bible describes reality. Because everything is sacred in the Bible. And in fact, it is a. I was watching an interview with a guy called Tom Holland, who's a historian. He's from England, and he's done a lot of work on the Roman Empire. And he wouldn't call himself a Christian, but he understands how Christianity has deeply shaped the world and the Western world in particular. And he's identified that this sort of secular sacred divide is something that particularly comes out of Protestant Europe, but it's just really confusing to other cultures. Like if you go to Islamic cultures, there's no secular sacred divide. It's all one thing. And you go to other cultures as well. But it's the culture that we live in, that this idea that there's a sacred and a secular divide. But that's not actually the case. Because everything that you think is secular was actually created by God, which makes it sacred. The all things, the everything of this passage over and over again. And it's something that we need to labour on with our minds a bit, because our default is not that. Our default is that we have the spiritual parts of our lives and then the ordinary everyday parts of our lives. But God fits everywhere. There has been debate in recent times about whether Christian schools will be allowed to employ only Christian teachers. And I'm not going to get into that debate, but a big way that you would essentially make it a non-issue is if you just understood that every possible subject at school, God had something to say about that. And if you're going to teach in a Christian school, you needed to be able to explain how God had something to say about that subject. Who wants to suggest a subject from school or university? Just yellow one out. Geography. Right? So, does God have anything to say about geography? Well, yes, because we understand that God formed geography. Right? And there are times when there's been boundaries set for water, and there's sometimes when the water has exceeded those boundaries and all those sorts of things. There's Psalms that talk about how the whole way the landscape works is sustained by God. But more deeply than that, if it's God's, then we need to treat it with respect. It's not just for me to dig up as I wish, but how can I dig it up with respect? We'll put it back maybe after I finish digging it up. Another subject.
IT.
IT. At its deepest level, this universe runs on information. Yeah. So like the genes in every cell in your body are like complex computer code made up of little words. And humans only now are just developing neural networks that mimic organic neural networks. And there is amazing emergent properties that are coming out of these things like these. And so it's deeply connected to the underlying structure of the universe. But then it's also about, well, what information is there? And how, what does God say to that? So like they've found with these some of these large language models that you ask them a question and they will give you an answer and sometimes it will lie. The other AI thing will deliberately lie. But they've done testing and they say, and sometimes if you prompt the AI, please be truthful, it actually is more truthful in the answers it gives. It's amazing these emergent properties that are coming out of it. And so you see with IT, there are now things that are about affecting, there's moral choices and biases that are built into it. And so we now there's a connection between two. Another subject. Home economics. The Son of God gave us a meal to remember him by. And home economics is not just about the mechanics of the feeding or the producing of the food, but it's about the community that's there. But it's also maybe about when you pray and you think, God, is there any injustice in the supply chain of this food that I'm eating? Are there people that have been underpaid for the harvesting of whatever it is that I am now enjoying? Is there economic injustice underlying my home economics? Are there some people that are excluded from my home economics and are poor? Another one.
Submarines.
Well, I don't think there's any subjects at school called submarines, but there is, that intersects with a whole bunch of subjects, including maritime stuff, and there's geography in there. There's a whole bunch of stuff about physics and materials and understanding the physical world and the fact that in Genesis, God has given us a supervisory or a management role over the world, you know. Rule over the earth and subdue it. Manage it. But it's also about international relations. And what does God say about empires? And about war? And so these aren't just, you know, subjects where you have, you know, this is the cookie cutter Bible verse that goes with that subject. It's not like that. It actually requires often some deep thinking about how God actually speaks into that subject and how we can think about that subject the way God thinks about that subject. Because all things are created by him and for him. And then if we extend it beyond the classroom to life, there's no aspect of your life where God cannot or maybe should not be included. The way you transport yourself around the city, the way you choose to go on holidays, what you do with your money, what sort of houses you build, how you relate to neighbours, what you do at work. We talked about home economics before. Well, economics is a description of how all of our work interacts with each other. And Dallas Willard, ding, 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 for those playing the Dallas Willard bingo, says that our work is the primary way we love our neighbours. So when you're commuting to your office job or going to work in the factory, be aware that when you're going to that, you're going to love people, to love a neighbour. When you're in negotiating a dispute as a lawyer, or you're treating someone in a hospital, or maybe you're just wrangling kids and trying to get them to the three different schools that they go to. The work that you engage in is an expression of loving people. And because they're made in the image of God, it's actually an expression of how you love God. That's why the two great commandments are connected together. Love God with everything and love your neighbour as yourself, because people are God's people, and so the way you treat them is you are indirectly treating God that way. And so there is no aspect of your life. Cleaning the car. Not that I ever clean the car. Definitely not the outside, and probably maybe once every 6 months I clean the inside. And I need to put it on my to-do list before I go to clean the inside of the car, because otherwise there might be, like, in 3 months' time, some chips under the seat that are now very furry. But every aspect of life, all things, are connected to God. There's nothing that isn't. And so where does God fit in your life? Where are the gaps? Where have you said, oh, I don't think God actually belongs in that part of my life? Or I hadn't consciously thought whether God acts in that part of my life. And for those of you who are watching on TV, there's just a rumble happening in the church building. It's something to do with the air conditioning, and that's okay. It'll stop at some point. That's all right. It's our air conditioning system weirdly does these things sometimes. But just scan through your life now. Is there any part of your life where you haven't actually taken God consciously into it? Is there something in your life that has been, if you like, ring-fenced and said, oh, that's not even a place where God is? Connie, you might just like to try turning them all on and then turning them off again. Because what's happening is that the coolant from the condensers outside is being pumped around through them, even though that they're not on at the moment, for whatever reason. So have you thought of one area in your life where maybe God has been excluded, or where you haven't consciously included God? Because if we're trying to figure out where we fit in life, how does God fit into that circumstance? Okay, so I'm lying in a hospital bed in a hospital. So God is there. All things belong to God. So how do I fit into that circumstance when I can't even shower myself or feed myself or whatever else? Well, I'm a person there where other people have a chance to love God through serving me. And I have a chance to be kind to the people who are really stressed because they're doing their fourth night shift in a row or whatever. I may be less able to do things, but maybe I can spend a bit more time praying. So you see, when we find ourselves in circumstances where we ask, where is God in this circumstance? We can then begin to answer the question more accurately, how do I fit into this place? Because so many times we think that I connect with God or I find my fit by getting somewhere other than I am. But the only place you can connect to God and begin to find your fit is where you are. You know, it's like I can't remember the exact joke, but you know, you're going to ask an Irishman the directions to somewhere. So, well, that depends where you're starting from, right? You're starting, like, because the assumption is you start from here. But often we think, oh, if only I was over there, then X, Y, Z. But God fits into every part of life. But then you might think, well, actually, It doesn't seem like God fits into this part of life. There's injustice going on, there's pain going on, there's suffering going on, there's loss going on, there's grief going on, people are hurting other people. Where does God fit in that? And it's the reconciling work of God, which is also in this passage. For God was pleased to have all his fullness dwell in Jesus, that is, and through him to reconcile to himself all things, whether things on earth or things in heaven, by making peace through his blood shed on the cross. You see, you might live in a family circumstance which is fraught with tension and conflict. And God fits there, but not in the way that the dynamics of the relationships are currently going. And God's heart is for there to be reconciliation for individuals with God and for individuals with each other. And that's a costly and difficult exercise, so costly and difficult that Jesus had to die on a cross to help bring some of that about. You see, we are not saying that God is equal with everything in the universe, because that would say, well, God is equal with all of the terrible things that are going on as well. No, we say, no, there is a God, good God, and he created a good universe, but there is broken and sinful things going on in it, and God is working within it to redeem it and to reconcile it and to put it back to right. And it's right for us to feel the acuteness of God is not there. I'm not sensing God there. Because at that point, when you're feeling that acuteness, you are actually close to God. Because God notices that too. God sees the damage and the hurt and the lack and the suffering. And you might just be an agent to cry out to God saying, God, redeem this place, reconcile these relationships, do something, God. Do something through me. Because God's intention is to, we read it in verse 22, but now he has reconciled you by Christ's physical body through death to present you holy in his sight, without blemish and free from accusation. Because we have blemishes and we can be rightly accused of things at the moment. But we trust in Jesus. We invite him into our lives and the work of the Spirit in our lives. And God begins a forgiving work, removing the accusation, and a restoring work, removing the blemishes. So who is God? Revealed in Jesus. Where does God fit? Everywhere. But there's dysfunction and brokenness and sin in all those places. And so God fits in a reconciling work. What God's on about is putting everything right, to restore everything to the way it should be. And so when we know who God is, we know that we are God's children. When we know where God fits, we know that we fit with God, whatever else is happening and whoever else is around us. And when we identify what God is aiming to do in each and every circumstance, i.e. reconcile everything to God, that gives us a clue about what you and I can do. What difference can I make? You see, Paul said in verse 22, but God has reconciled you by Christ's physical body through death to present you holy in his sight. That's what God was on about. And Paul later on said in verse 28, he is the one we proclaim, admonishing and teaching everyone with all wisdom, so that we may present everyone fully mature in Christ. So Paul has aligned his purposes with God's purposes. You're wondering what to do with your life? Well, look where something is out of alignment with God's purposes and try and cooperate with God to see it being more in line with God's purposes. Whether that's conservation or predicting the weather better so you can give warnings to people to stay away from dangerous weather circumstances, or learning how to discover treatments for illnesses and diseases, or explaining God to people, or negotiating peace between warring parties, including people who are excluded. lots of different ways that you and I can say, okay, well, God's heart is for reconciliation and to reconnect these things to God. How can I help to do that? And so we get robust answers to the questions that impact us by understanding the question, the way that God answers those questions: identity, belonging, and purpose. So everything belongs to God. God fits everywhere. Are there areas in your life where you have not thought about that or deliberately excluded from God from that? Do you need to have conversations with your teenagers and your young people at home about what subjects are you learning at school and how does God connect with those? Do you need to be praying, God, where I live, learn, work and play, how can I cooperate with your reconciling work that you have already started in Jesus so that I know I'm actually investing my life in something of significance? Let's pray. God, these are really valuable words that speak to us about the grand sweep of history and you and life. I pray, God, that they would stay in our hearts and shape our thinking and our feeling and our acting. God, that we may interact with the world and with those around us shaped by the way you interact with the world and you interact with those around us. Amen.
Just before we sing our last song,
there's a chance to just pause and say, okay, what's the thing that stood out to me from our service today? Maybe it was something that Jude said or prayed. Maybe it was a line in a song. Or maybe God's been saying, hey, David, you need to go and do X, Y, and Z this afternoon. What's the thing that stood out to you in your heart and what might you do in response? Just a few moments to reflect, and then we're going to sing our final song.